Welcome to Season 10 of Talking with Traders as we begin 2025. We're into the fifth year of this podcast that began in 2020, and we've just surpassed 200,000 downloads of Talking with Traders. Once again, IG have come on board as the sponsor of this podcast. We're truly grateful to have such a global leader in online trading as our sponsors. In the coming weeks, I'll be interviewing various guests from around the globe on the topic of trading. Some of these will be past guests that we welcome back to the show, and some will be new guests. The idea is to attract a broad spectrum of different perspectives from players in various areas of the markets. None of what you hear here is financial advice, but it is intended to get you thinking about how you might be able to apply what you hear here to your own trading and investing. Remember to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast app. That way, you'll be notified when new episodes are released. Or, if you watch these interviews on YouTube, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and give us a thumbs up and leave a comment if you wish. We welcome the engagement. Once again, thank you to IG for sponsoring this podcast into its fifth year, and thank you, listeners, for your continued support. Now, let's get into this week's interview. This week, we're heading to Portugal, and our guest is Mark Walton on this edition of Talking with Traders. Mark, welcome. It's great to have you with us on the podcast.
Thank you very much.
It's good to get new guests on, and I've been looking forward to chatting to you because I know you've got quite an interesting story, not just around trading, but just about your life in general. And something that we're going to touch on is your love of music, and I see you have a guitar in the background there.
Yep, my Tanglewood.
Yeah,
doesn't get played as much as I would like, but yeah.
Yeah, we'll touch on that in a moment. But as this is Talking with Traders, we will mostly speak about your trading life. And and to start that conversation, can you give us a bit of background to your career up to this point? I mean, I know you run Forex Mentor Pro at the moment. That's what you've been doing for a number of years now. But before that, you had, you ran a business with a lot of staff and decided to pack it all in your early 40s. Tell us the story.
Okay. Well, I started my first business when I was 21 and sold the third one when I was coming up to 40. And as you mentioned, I had the midlife crisis. I bought the little red sports car for a while, which was not useful with the four kids, but we had another car.
Yeah.
And then we decided to sell up and sell the main house and a suitcase each. We went off to live in the Canary Islands. And a long-term goal of mine, I was a hippie in my youth, so I had the hair as well as the guitar. And I went back from earning six figures to earning very little, but singing and playing guitar in a band and a duo, and loved it. So for me, I talked to friends at the time, and they were all running a book, you know, they're back within 6 months. But I was so stressed with the business I had. I had a lot of staff.
What business was it? Sorry, just to interrupt you there.
We were dealing in frozen food. So we would buy all the oversupply, overproduction and rejects from the big factories that were supplying Marks and Spencers, etc.
Yeah.
And we would repackage them and sell them in bulk via shops and markets, but we also supplied the prison service.
Yeah.
And that was ironic when I came onto trading a bit later, because the discipline that was needed to deal with the prison service, they could literally turn up now and want to see who's on site and go through the records and everything. So very, very strict environment.
Okay, so it's interesting, though, that you didn't have a background then in financial markets at all. You actually came from the real economy, as it were, and exited it, as you say, had a midlife crisis. I laugh at what you say about the red sports car, because that's exactly what I've done. I'm 45, and 2 years ago, I bought a red Mercedes SL from 1991. So I'm right there. I'm right there in the thick of the midlife crisis stage with you at the moment. So I'm grinning at this conversation. Anyways. I've interrupted you. Carry on, Mark.
No. I mean, the thing is, most people wouldn't have done what I did. But I think I've mentioned to you that I think I'd have been on my third heart attack by now or dead. I had the best 25 years of my life, and trading gave me the ability to not initially, but it gave me the ability to do that. I just think that as again we talked about, you've moved to the UK with the horrible winters, and I just couldn't live through another one. And I was sick of the politics, and I was sick of employing people, and I just thought, sod it. So we sold the main house, we sold the business, we had a lump of cash, we bought some houses. And 20 years ago, it was easy to buy property in the UK. Money was cheap, deposits were low. I even bought some houses without even paying a deposit. An American thing I'd seen, and we put houses on interest only, which my father worked in a factory with no financial experience at all. I failed maths, basic maths at school. I don't think I ever passed that. And a good friend of mine said, "Hey, you want to do it this way?" And it was a great idea. We bought 10 houses, and we spent less than 100K, and that was bringing his income. So although, sell up and move to a desert island to go sing and play on the guitar in a band is a dream, I did have a plan. And for anybody that's trying to learn to trade or do anything, I always say, look, you can't just quit your day job to do this. You need to have multiple streams of income. And so we did that. We spent a year, my wife and I, we had tradesmen in, did all the work. We decorated. I will never paint anything again in my life because after 10 of them, you really get sick of it. And so yeah, one suitcase each and off we went. Kids didn't want to go, so that was fun for the first year or so. And but yeah, we loved it. And now they look back and they had a great childhood, like the UK was when I was a kid. They just went out in the morning and came home when they were hungry, and they were at the beach all day. So it was very
Amazing.
idyllic.
When was that? What year did you head off to the Canary Islands?
I always get confused. I think it was 2001, 2001, 2002. And we were there until after COVID. And by then, the kids had grown up. We had a big house with a pool that we didn't use. And the cops were just insane in Spain during COVID. You literally couldn't leave the house for 7 weeks, even to exercise. You were only allowed to go to the nearest shop for provisions. You couldn't go just to buy alcohol. Although I remember in South Africa, you weren't allowed to buy alcohol full stop. We had a fridge full of, well, cupboards full of long life milk and alcohol. Because if you bought the long life milk, you could buy the alcohol. It was insane. 7 weeks
Yeah,
of
it's crazy times that we lived through. All
it.
right, so all right, so you headed off there, 2000, early 2000s. At what point then did you actually start trading?
I had traded stocks in the 90s during the dot-com boom. So, and that was a period a bit like crypto in 2020. It was easy. It was just going up and whatever you bought went up. And then in my naivety, I hung on too long and gave most of it back. But that stood me in good stead since. So it was a good, it was painful, but it was a good education. I was playing and singing and playing guitar, but I mean, I was only working 2, 3 hours a day. And so I had the day to myself. The first year, I just chilled. I read lots, I practiced a lot, and did nothing. But I then started looking at trying to make money on the internet, and I learned how to build websites. I tried internet marketing, which didn't work very well, and I stumbled upon Forex. Never heard of it before at the time. It wasn't as well known as now. Bought a DVD from a guy in England, which taught you all the basics. And ironically, it was all technical. And when I was doing stocks, I thought technical was mumbo jumbo. But hey, it seemed to work. And then I had a very long, tortured 2 years plus of struggling, losing money, buying Wonder Systems, losing more money, and got to the verge of quitting. And for me, that I took some time off. I had a few months off just to let the old brain settle because I knew I could do it. But the thing that screwed me up was the lack of discipline. And I said earlier, with the prison service, everything was so strict. So I came from a background business-wise, everything had to be orderly and organized. And I came to trading, and it was like, woohoo, I can do what I like here. And as a result of which, just lost and lost. And then after 2 years, I wasn't losing my thing. I mean, I did everything wrong. I revenge traded, overtraded, over-leveraged, lost so much that I threw everything on number seven in the casino equivalent, blew the account up. Often. But then I started to do better. But what would happen is the periods between meltdowns just got longer. So in my early days, I could make the money. The first time I made the target in 2003, I think it was $2,000 a week I wanted to earn. And after 6, 9 months of trying, I made it. I spent all weekend on a high, and by the following Wednesday, I'd given 1500 back. And then the second year, the end of the second year, when I was on the verge of quitting, I'd gone 5 months earning good money, slow and steady, slow and steady, and I lost a chunk of it within a week. Well, actually, within 2 days. And at that point, and that's the issue most of us face as traders,
It's a
isn't
very common story that you tell me, and I think it's almost like a rite of passage, actually.
Yes.
Guys go through these ups and downs. The downs can be very deep and make you want to quit.
Oh, yeah.
And it's those few who manage to sort of push through and dig deep that carry on and ultimately manage to find a recipe that works. But the key thing, right, is that you had your passive income sources whilst all this was going on.
Yes.
So you weren't, it's a, you, you, and I presume that's still the case today. You're not a trader that eats what you kill. You've got alternative revenue sources that look after
Yeah.
you. So
We have
trade.
just sold all the houses in the last few years because the
Right.
tax situation in the UK is so poor now, and the latest government's terrible. So we've got out of property. But prior to that, yes. And then I started teaching people to trade in 2008. I was a football seller coach in Spain for 15 years. That didn't bring much money, and that was more for the passion of it. But yeah, we've always had as many different things as possible. And again, this is what I say to new traders. It's funny, I was talking to one of your countrymen this morning, and he's kind of thinking of quitting his job. And I said, hang on, we all go through down periods. We go through periods and they can last months. And you're starting every day from a negative perspective, and it's mentally draining. And if you're just relying on that, it's too much. So anybody thinking of doing it should ease themselves in. And if if you've got a current skill that you can monetize, or if you're an expert in something, or you've got a hobby that you can monetize, you need to think of multiple income streams.
100%, absolutely. And I get approached by people regularly as well, asking, telling me they want to quit their job and take up trading full time, and it gives me shivers because I know how difficult it is. And also, a lot of them are undercapitalized, have debt, too high living costs to service, etc., etc. It's just a recipe for disaster for most people to try and go down that road. So I think we're on the same page as far as that goes. But in terms of your own trading, right? I mean, at what point did you sort of realize that you were able to be sustainable as a trader? And what changed?
I found a mentor. We still work with him now. He's in his 70s. He's rich. He was trading on the floor in the Chicago Board of Exchange for Merrill Lynch in the 80s. And then he employed his own traders. He's got a degree in psychology and NLP. And so he's seen it from all sides of the fence. And thankfully, I don't know how, I can't remember how I found him, but and really, I feel so annoyed with myself afterwards because I'm from Yorkshire in the north of England. We're known for being Scotsmen with the generosity squeezed out of us, so we don't like to spend money. And I'm a smart guy. This is not that complicated, and the marketers are really clever because they just say, "Well, if you bought there and sold there, you're going to make a squillion." And so I really regret not finding him earlier. But with him, I was trading 15-minute charts, sitting there 8 hours a day, and he and I were doing a talk like this online, and I kind of say it was black and white. It's that long ago, but I started to trade, and he just said, "Stop! What are you doing? He had me wearing a flipping heart monitor. It was that bizarre, but my heart rate went up, my legs were going nuts, and it was just I was addicted to it. And you mentioned, I think we said something earlier, but later on, I got to the point of being bored with it. And actually, being bored is actually a really good place to be with Forex, because nowadays, it's 95% is planning. I don't spend a right lot of time in front of a screen at all. I plan everything. So I think that answered the question. I can't remember the question.
Well, the question was, at what point did you realize you were sustainable, and what changed for you? But I'm interested that you said a coach really made all the difference.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. Without him, I would have been screwed. I mean, there's two things to this. One, I was highly motivated because yes, we had the money coming in, but I've got four kids, we've got private school bills, we were spending a lot more than I thought we were going to spend. And if I hadn't succeeded, then I would have had to go home with my tail between my legs. And I find that most people are hobby traders, and It's if out of necessity, and I think this is one of the things that COVID taught people, anybody that didn't get money from the government suddenly think, I need to find something that I can do. And crikey, was that motivational to do something? And so that was a big thing. And then the other thing was the being taught by somebody and pulled up when you did something wrong. And also knowing that somebody's watching what you're doing. And I have one of my private students said recently, it's like, what's he going to say if I take this trade? And that's a really good checklist within the process is instead of being gung-ho, think about having somebody behind you. And if you don't want a coach and you don't want a mentor, then get a friend to do it. But I think the fact that we're just left alone in a room on our own, billy no mates, with all this sophisticated kit and screens, and we just lose our common sense.
Absolutely. So interesting. Something you said there about most traders being hobbyists, sort of stuck with me because I like the saying that hobbies cost money. So if you're going to be doing trading, it shouldn't be a hobby. You need to treat it like a business. Hobbies cost money. You don't want your trading to cost you money. Now, in your bio, you also did trade for clients for quite some time, didn't you? I think was it from 2008 on?
2000, well, 2005, after I'd worked with Rich for 6, 9 months, he recommended me to a fund in America, which nowadays would not be allowed. And they had a trader that had a heart attack. There's a clue. And so I worked remotely for them from Lanzarote. And they put me on a, I mean, they told me it was a cash account, but they put me on a small account. Then they put me on a 25 real account of 50. And I was with them till 2008. And by which time, I'd come to realize that everybody else was getting paid a lot more than me. And I'd always worked for myself. And so I started working for clients. But it was the best thing ever for me because the rules, if you work for a real fund, then the rules are if you break the rules, no matter how good you are out. And I remember going to a thing in London 10, 15 years ago where one of the bank traders, the top guy, won a prize one year. And the following year, they got rid of him because he kept breaking the rules. And it's negative for the rest of the team. And the bank know that, one day when he goes on a bad run, he could cost us some serious money. And everybody remembers Nick Leeson. So that was really good. And then when I started trading 2008 for private clients, I'd started posting on Twitter. And Twitter in the early days was people genuinely trying to help each other. And it was just a chatting group. And so I was posting tips on there saying, I'm going to short the euro pound tomorrow at this place, et cetera. And started getting people following me saying, hey, this guy seems to know what he's talking about. Will you teach me? So I taught a few and then that went well. And I was coaching football salary as well. So I do like teaching. And but the good thing for me was it stopped me. When I got away from the fund and started doing it myself, I started to get the bad habits creeping back in because ultimately I was accountable to the clients, but they didn't really know what I was doing on a daily basis. And so for me, the teaching was a distraction because when I'm bored, I'm dangerous. I even recently, last year, I day traded for a week. I had some of the members of our program were getting bored because I wait if we are paid to wait, and I day traded, and then the net result at the end of the week I'd lost. I think I lost 0.5%, 0.25%, but I'd taken 10 trades. I got twice during the night because news announcements were due, and I could see it's almost like being a junkie. You can so quickly slide back down, and so it's this accountability all the time. I teach people to have checklists before they take trades, must check the news, must check this, check everything. And if you can, as I say, just get somebody to check what you're doing. I mean, all you need to do is share the free MyFX book link and have somebody follow you, swap it with a mate if you're both trading.
Yeah, I often think it would be great if we could just have a little trading policeman sitting on our shoulder, just flicking us on the ear every time we tried to do something we shouldn't or break the rules, right? It would help. Do you find then that teaching is you said it's a nice distraction, but do you find that it also helps you in your own discipline with your own trading?
Because For me, if I tell people I'm going to do this week and then do something completely off, because what we do within our membership site is we tell people in advance what we're going to trade for the weekend. So it's not a tipping service and it's not signals, but using the strategy that we use, you say, right, this is what we're going to do this week. So that helps me. An added benefit, I've had two trades in the last 3 or 4 weeks that came from students of mine that pointed something out to me that I hadn't seen. And so the end of it all, we all miss things, and I think anybody can do this. It's not complicated. It's all to do with the discipline and the rules and the structure. But the other part of it is it's a very lonely pastime. So especially, I was going to stop teaching privately during COVID because I was making so much money from crypto. I just thought, I don't need the distraction. But because of the situation being locked in the house for 7 weeks, I was so grateful because I got to speak to intelligent people around the world, and it kept my sanity. So I do less and less on the personal level nowadays. I'm semi-retired, but it certainly helps, and it helps in multiple ways. And I'm fortunate; I can pick and choose who I work with. So I have some really interesting people I work with now,
What
and
are
I
the what what
it's
are
through
the
history.
yeah what are the sort of the demographics of the people that you mentor and coach in your service now?
Pre-COVID, the average person was 50 plus, middle management or own business. Kids had left school and left home or gone to school or gone to college. And now I am a mixture of sick of what they're doing, even if it's their own business, and starting to be worried about their pension. And most, I read recently, most self-employed people, their pension pot is less than $100,000. And that's the pot. So that is not going to pay. And I know, I thought semi-retired at 40, and you realize when you're semi-retire, you've more time, and therefore you spend more money than when you're working. So that was the archetypal private client. When COVID came along, suddenly I got a lot of young people. And we're talking Ashley, a young guy I taught in 2020. He's got a degree in port management. He quit his job 2 years ago, trades full time, and he works with us. And a young guy in America, 20, 23, 24. And I think for them, the COVID, it's almost like, BC and AD in terms of life now. It's before what happened before COVID and since. But a lot of the younger ones, I think, got to the point and think, I don't want to be reliant on the government, or I don't want to be reliant on an employer. And I have people, one of my private guys is a IT guy who was on a kind of rolling contract. But when the COVID came along, the government didn't pay him anything because he'd got savings. So he'd been prudent and saved up all his life and got 50 grand in the bank and ended up having to spend it through COVID. So since then, it's a mixture. But the other thing is, it's still predominantly male.
Yeah, it's
Hardly
interesting that.
any girls, women.
Yeah. Do you have any theories on why that is the case? Because it's very common. I mean, in my business as well, I also run a sort of mentoring tipping type of business. I hate calling it tipping because it's not that, but it's analysis. And it's also vast majority are male.
I think finance traditionally, historically, has been a male thing. And I think trading is very much an alpha male environment in a lot of ways. And actually, the few ladies that I've taught privately actually are very good traders. And I find with ladies that they're more, if you set them tasks, I always set people homework. It's the blokes, like I was at school, who turn up at the last minute with a bit of paper, either the dog's eaten it or they've just done this thing. Whereas I find women apply themselves more, and that they, if you say to them, this is the rule, they are more likely to follow it than men as to why. And two blokes talking about why women is dangerous ground nowadays. But I think it's probably traditionally the alpha male background. But there's no reason why women can't make good traders. And I say we have quite a few as members, but the percentage is still 90 plus percent is male.
But I've always thought actually that women just by their nature are probably cut out better to be traders for the reasons that you've cited, actually. They're
I thought you were
easier.
going to say housewives, then. I was going to say we're
No,
both
no,
in
no.
the
No,
room.
like you said, we'll be treading in very dangerous territory there.
Oh, no.
But no, I just think, from men have egos. And as you said, alpha
Yes.
male, very dominant, in the big
Yes.
swinging dick in the trading community, et
Yep.
cetera, et cetera. The women are not susceptible to that sort of personality trait, which
Absolutely.
I've always thought does actually position them better
Yes.
to probably do trading successfully and to be more consistent, actually.
I have a client. He and his wife are both learning how to trade, and she's way better than him. But it's not because he can't do it, it's because she sticks to the rules and follows the process. So
Yeah, interesting. Something on your bio is you kind of said it's important to be you focus on being in the right place or in the right markets at the right time. And you mentioned crypto, you mentioned dot-com back and back in the end of the 2000s. Being in the right space at the right time, talk to me a little bit about that, and where's that right now, do you think?
Well, this week I have been buying mining stocks, gold and silver mining stocks.
Right.
In 2022, I said to folks, look, I'm going to start buying gold. Gold was at 1800 and silver was about $18. And I said, with all the money printing that's gone on, inflation is getting out of hand, and the ultimate safe haven is gold, and there's not enough of it. And if everything turns to the doo-doo, because there was a concern in 22 that we could see rampant inflation and then stagflation. So I started to buy gold and silver, and it turned out to be a really good idea because gold today is at 2950, silver's at 33. And so it's doubled, which is great. I've made a lot more money from mining stocks, though, because, for example, last year, 2024, silver was up 40, 45%. My best silver stock was up 260%.
Yeah.
And I think that today, this is not financial advice. I am not a financial advisor anywhere. But I think today that gold and silver in the ground is at a discount, because when you look at the price of gold and silver at highs, silver's all-time high was 49.50 after the crash in 2008. But when you look at where it is, and when you look at where the miners are, it's a disparity. So to me, gold and silver at the moment are in the ground, discounted. And they came down the other day. This is 13th of March. We've recorded this. So 3 days ago, the stock market came down because of Trump, brought the miners down as well. So that was a good opportunity. 2020, I got into crypto at the right time. I started buying Bitcoin at 8 grand. I mean, you could say it was the wrong time. I should have been buying it 10 years earlier, but I caught that cycle. I actually did a webinar in the October 2020 where I said to people, I think this could be the best financial decision in your lifetime. And Bitcoin then was at 12. And I explained why I thought it would double and double again, because, and it was all to do with the blockchain. And it tripled in 11 weeks. So again, we caught the right cycle at the right time. But gold and silver, I mean, gold and silver after the crash in 2008, 2009, were the better investment than the S&P. S&P took 5 years to recover, whereas gold took a year. But then from 2012 to 2018, it was a terrible investment because it just sat there. It cost you money to insure and store and didn't pay a dividend. And the S&P was going way up and gold and silver were drifting sideways. So it's this cyclical thing. If you can catch the right cycle at the right time, you can be very profitable. And this week, Forex is really difficult this week because of Trump. So hey ho, this sector's interesting. I use the same technical analysis. I only use two EMAs, trend lines and Fibonacci. But when it comes to stocks and crypto, I use 70% fundamental reasons to buy. And then I, with Forex, it's 70% technical, filtered with some fundamental. But I don't use leverage with crypto under no circumstances.
Because it moves around so violently anyway. I suppose you don't. If you add leverage to that, it can either make you very rich or very poor very quickly.
Yes, or both.
You mentioned some of the technicals. I just want to go back to that because I know you said so on Forex, majority of your decision making is technicals, and you mentioned that your indicators are relatively simple. Just give us that. You said two EMAs and
I
trend
use
lines
the
and Fibonacci. What else? Anything else?
I use the 55 EMA and the 200 EMA. I used to use loads of them.
And is that
I
on any time frame? What time frame charts are you generally looking at?
start on the weekly,
Okay.
and I look at 20 odd pairs.
Right.
In the early days, I used to focus on the majors, but that's no good because they're correlated. So on a bad week, there's nothing happening, and on a good week, they're all happening. So I look at 20 odd pairs on a weekly, and basically, I just skim through and I go, no, oh, that's interesting. And if it's interesting on a weekly, and also partly on a weekly, I'm looking, is it going up or down or sideways? So it's not
Sure.
rocket science. And then on a daily, I look for confluence. So I teach people that the best way to do it on a step-by-step basis is you must have at least five reasons of confluence to take a trade in the same area.
Right.
And they can be things like horizontal support and resistance, trend lines, an EMA on multiple time frames. So on a daily chart, I still need to know where the weekly and the monthly are. Whole numbers have been important the last few years, as daft as it is. A lot of the pairs stop at the whole numbers and bounce. Fibonacci, I only pay attention to Fibonacci after 50% fib. And then for me, 78.6 fib, if that breaks, as the dollar index did last week, then now we're looking at a reversal. So it's not complicated, but that is my edge. My technical analysis is my edge. And bearing in mind that maths, I struggle with maths, which is weird. It's all about pattern recognition. It's just and probability. If it bounced here last time, and now I've got multiple reasons in that same area, it's probably going to do it again. And then, as long as the risk reward is at least 1 to 2, i.e., I can make twice what I risk, then I will take the trade. And if it's not, I won't take the trade. And I say to people, have a checklist, literally write it down and tick off at least five reasons. And you will find that if nothing else, no matter what strategy people are using now, it will help them cut down on the number of losing trades.
But
Because if you
also,
have.
I presume also cut down on the number of trades in general. Right, because and that's something else I've found is important. Actually, people tend to overtrade, and
Oh, big
often
time.
l
Big
less is
time.
more. And I guess if you're saying you've got to tick all five criteria, well, that means you're probably not going to get too many trades too regularly, let's say.
No. Last few years, within Forex Mentor Pro, I have hit my monthly target. My monthly target is 3 to 5%, which is not a lot. But if you're doing it on a decent sized account, and nowadays you can do it on these funded accounts, then 3 to 5% on 100K is reasonable. And when I was trading for clients, I was trading seven figures. So that's all I did. And the issue for most people is that they throw $1,000 in the account, they want to quit the job. And I say to them, well, risk 0.5% per trade. And it's like, well, crikey, on a good month, you make $50. This is boring. But the point is, this is the education part. But if you then can make that on a big account, that's how you make money. So what happens on a $1,000 account? And I did the same. Well, this is boring. I'll crank the risk up. And then they're risking 2%, 3%, 4%, three, four bad trades, and now they're in trouble. So.
But with that, I mean, because I completely agree with what you're saying, and you know, keep the risks down and risk 0.5% or 1%, whatever, but you know, small numbers. The reality is, though, for someone who's coming at this trying to kind of get cracking and build up a stake, and not everyone's got $100,000 to
No.
start with. In fact, most people don't. Maybe they come at it with 5,000. They almost do need to swing the bat a little harder, right? To kind of get into the game. But as much as that is, it's against the ethos I know both you and I stand for, because you know we're very strict about risk management, and you mustn't lose too much and everything. But almost like you say, if you've got a $5,000 account, you know, you're not going to turn that into $100,000 without swinging the bat fairly hard and hoping that you get a couple of home runs.
I had a guy who turned 2,000 into 75,000 in 3 months. That was not with me. We were doing we do a weekly live training session, and I was telling the tale of a student I taught years ago who doubled his account and then quit his job, and then he doubled his account again. This is when he started. So then he started trading for family and friends, and then he lost it all because he was just on a very lucky streak. The thing is with these funded accounts, when they first came out, they were a Ponzi. They were designed deliberately to trip people up. So you had to make 10% in a month. So you were swinging the bat every time to try to do it, and guess what? You blew it up. Now, since there's a few new bodies have come in, everybody's kind of cleaned their act up, and now you've got to make 10%, but you can do that in 6 months. So now the pressure's off. And what I said to folks with the funded is risk half a percent to start with, and then once you get 2 or 3% in front, then you can start to crank it up a bit, 0.75. But if you start off at 1%, which doesn't sound a lot, three or four losing trades, now you're in a hole, and you're going to spend the next 6 months trying to dig your way out of the hole. So the moral of it is treat the, it used to be demo accounts, still get a demo account. But once you understand the basics of it, buy the cheapest fundest account you can. There's one at the minute on at $50 for a 10,000 account. The great thing about it is it gives you the structure and the discipline as though you were trading in a fund. So for the educational benefit alone is immense. But the other thing is, if you've got university to study for a degree, you're talking 3 years and 100,000 in school fees. You can learn how to do this for a few hundred quid, but you need to treat it that way and say, well, okay, I'm only on the 5,000 account. I've only made $100 last month, but I am acquiring a skill that I can apply in multiple markets. I use the same technical stuff in everything. And, you have a skill set that you could use for the rest of your life. So again, it's been sensible. First thing I get people to do when they come to us is write out a business stroke life plan. What are you trying to achieve? And set some goals. And then write the trading rules out. And then write a checklist out. Because it has to be structured. And it has to be done in a proper way. Otherwise, you will not win. You will lose.
It's interesting what you said about why are you doing this? Because I think that's always an important one. Why are you trading? What's your why? There's got to be a reason, and it's not to make money, because obviously we all want to make money, but it needs to usually be something that whatever the money buys you, right? It's freedom
Well, exactly.
or yeah, better standard of living, or your children's education, or some important reason at the end of the day that you can say, this is why I'm doing this and why I'm putting in the effort.
Absolutely.
We're coming towards the end of our allotted time, so I just want to wrap it up. But I mean, two questions first up. If you were to give advice to a youngster who's coming into the world wanting to start trading and make a career of it, what's the one biggest piece of advice you'd give them?
Avoid YouTube
Avoid YouTube and
Insta.
Instagram.
If you want to go down that rabbit hole, come back in 2 years' time when you've lost a lot of money and hair and wasted a lot of time. 95% that's on there is BS. And when you're new, you don't know you can't pick out the few that are sensible. But I mean, there's lots of free stuff. There's a really good website called Baby Pips that does a real good introduction to basics for learning how to trade. We have a free course on our site as well that teaches all the basics for fundamentals, and sorry, for technical and some fundamental. But the main thing is, you made the comment earlier about the hobby. One of my clients 10 years ago wrote an article and he said, if you treat it like a hobby, it will pay you like a hobby. If you treat it like a business, it will pay you like a business. This is a business and it's a profession. It allows you to live wherever you want in the world. It allows you to have a better standard of living than you would if you're working for somebody else. You don't have the uncertainty of working for somebody else. You don't have the horribleness if you're in a job that you hate. So why spend the rest of your life doing something that you don't like if you can acquire a skill to do this?
Fair enough. And then lastly, just tell us about your service, forexmentorpro.com.
It's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it? We teach people how to trade technically. We also introduce some fundamentals and some psychology. Folks can join for $69 a month, and if they don't like it, within 30 days, we'll give them the money back. So if they want to do higher level or they want to join for a year or lifetime, then that's an option. But for $69, and it's a no quibble guarantee, if you're not happy, we give you it back. We had the lowest refund rate for years on one of the major Forex sites because with us, we don't overpromise. This is hard. It's not easy. It's going to take time and effort. But if you're willing to put the time and effort in, you might just be able to do this. And the final thing is, some people are just not any good at this.
Yeah, I guess that's right. Sometimes maybe people just need to realize that maybe they're not cut out for it.
Not everybody passes a university degree. So, there will be winners and losers in all of these things. But yeah, the main thing is Treat it like a business, be sensible, don't fall for all the BS and Tesla, people stood next to the Ferraris and all the rest of it. It's nonsense.
Too true, too true. Last thing, that guitar in the background, does it get much use these days?
Not as much as I would like, because I've got a bit of carpal tunnel, and working online doesn't help either. So no, not as much. And to be honest, I wanted to start playing again. Every time I go to a live music gig, I think I'm going to start again. I'm going to start again doing it properly. But I just haven't got the same burning passion about it as I did for 20 odd years ago. And again, this is the thing about success. If you haven't got a burning desire to succeed, which comes from a good book but called oh, Think and Grow Rich, you get a free copy for online if you Google it. A very old book. But the guy, Napoleon Hill, the author, interviewed all the richest men in America in the early 1900s to find out why they succeeded and other people didn't. And for me, it's having a passion. And if somebody comes to me for private coaching and I'm interested in teaching them, if they're like, oh, well, I fancy doing it or whatever, I think, go do something else. If you're
Yeah,
not
got it.
passionate, don't bother.
Yeah, too
And like
true.
you said, you don't come into this for the money. As daft as it sounds, forget about the money to start with. The money will flow if you do it properly.
Yeah, absolutely. Wise words. Well, Mark Walton, thank you very much for joining me. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. I'm
Thank
sorry
you,
we've only
Andrew.
got 40 minutes, actually. I feel like we could chat all afternoon, but we've got a time limit and we've just hit it. So thank you.
Okay, no problem. Nice to meet you. Best of luck in your new country and
Thank
the
you.
winters.
Thank you very much, Mark. You take care.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of Talking with Traders, sponsored by IG, a world-leading CFD provider. We really are privileged to have such a strong global provider of online trading services as our backer for this podcast series. Remember to subscribe for more episodes by clicking on the subscribe button of your favorite podcast app. Or if you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe to our YouTube channel, give us a thumbs up, and leave a comment. We welcome the engagement. Till next time.